This is a UK Carcast podcast. Hello, and welcome to Behind the Canvas. I'm your host, Paul Bynes, and this is episode 4, George Calloway. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Behind the Canvas, and if you have been, thank you for listening to the other episodes. If you haven't been, why not? Go back and have a listen. In this episode, I talk to artist George Calloway. This is probably going to be the last one for a little while. I'm in the process of scheduling some interviews with some other artists for another batch of Behind the Canvas, but I have been neglecting UK Carcast a little, so I shall be doing one of those first. So there will be an episode 5. I can't say for certain at the moment who's going to be on it, but watch this space. Anyway, in the meantime, here's George Calloway. I am very pleased to welcome to this episode George Calloway. You may know George from his most recent work, which is Marvel Heroes and Villains for Rittenhouse Archive and Lady Death for Fivefinity, but he's also worked for Sad Littles and contributed cards to a number of charitable causes, including the recent Chicago Land set and for Blue Line Cancer. George, welcome to Behind the Canvas.
Yeah, hi Paul. It's about time I get on this show.
I should explain, George is actually a listener to the podcast, and I'm always pleased to talk to someone who actually listens to the podcast. First question, or the traditional question I ask all artists, is how did you get into art? So that's the first question for you.
As far as I know, I was just born. I can remember back to being 3 years old and drawing boats and cars. My mom would show me how to draw them, and I would just go crazy and start drawing them, and it was shortly after that I started drawing spaceships fighting in space from seeing all the commercials for the Star Wars movies when they would come out. Mm-hmm. And then it just started snowballing from there.
Yeah. A lot of artists I talked to mentioned influences such as comic books. Was that something that was an influence on you, or did you not do the comic book thing?
Initially, this is going back to 3 again. Yeah, initially, okay. It was just my imagination going, and then my family would keep giving me these books to read because I caught on pretty quick on reading, and I got fascinated by the art in them. And I remember also there was this one print painting that my parents had up in the living room a landscape, and I would just stare at that for, well, I guess I would say minutes and minutes, not necessarily hours at that age. But the art in the books and that print would always just stir my imagination because I would just picture what's going on in there. And I guess I kind of became an art fan and an artist at the same time.
Yeah.
So I just took in everything I saw as art, as cartoons, and it wasn't just necessarily that. It was just even Jim Henson, big influence early on. And I just, as far as using my imagination, Dr. Seuss, Chuck Jones, those type of people. The comic thing didn't happen until I think I was about 10. Before then, I'd read a couple comics because my dad was in the Army. He'd bring a couple Sergeant Rocks or whatever home every once in a while. I'd look through them. Yeah. That's when I lived in Alabama. I moved up here and made some friends about 10 years old. And I got stuck in detention with a person I'm still friends with. And he always brought in G.I. Joe Digest, so I started reading those and found out that he was in the door and all this other stuff and looked through his comics and just kind of started becoming an addiction. And by the time I was about 11, I think, I started just drawing one-off comics for myself and for my friends and somewhat competitions with other people too. But I was drawing other things like airplanes. I don't know why I got some weird fascination with airplanes, so...
It's perfectly good fascination to have, and it's better than some I can think of. So, you had a fairly wide-ranging set of influences. Can you think of any particular artists, or was it really just a subject matter? You weren't looking at the artists at the time.
See, I popped up this influence map that everybody's doing, and I've only gotten partially through it before I realized there's not enough room for me. But in order, you know, my mom was a big one. She doesn't do anything art-wise anymore, but she used to do ink washes and all this amazing stuff. John O'Brien. I just discovered this book I had when I was little that I remembered, but I didn't know what it was called or anything. But I remember he'd always used to put in, like, these little people, like, in the backgrounds and stuff, doing things. And I found the book this year, and I had to buy it. It was a book called Favorite Tales of Monsters and Trolls. It came out in 1977. I believe I got it probably around 1979, 1980. But I would just sit down every day and just look at that book and try and find all the little scenes going on in the background. It was pretty good too. I mean, the stories were pretty graphic as far as stories for a little kid. So that was interesting too. And Jim Henson was pretty big too early on in my life, just, you know, Muppets, Sesame Street, but I would also absorb what they would say in interviews and stuff, and I thought this guy was just such an awesome creator. I got to see the behind the scenes or whatever for The Dark Crystal on HBO in I think 82 or something like that, and I just became enamored with the guy. That was the first, probably the only guy as far as a celebrity that I actually cried the day he died, because I really, really was heartbroken. And then I would say Dr. Seuss more for the art in it, but I think that was more tied into Chuck Jones because he would do a lot of the cartoons for the Dr. Seuss movies. Chuck Jones is just my favorite animator of all time. I didn't realize it. I look back over the body of Looney Tunes and all that I watched, and my favorites have always been the Chuck Jones cartoons. And then I never saw a Star Wars movie until maybe 87 or 88, and I kind of watched them out of order.
Oh, really?
Dad wasn't big on taking us to the theaters and stuff, but I remember the commercials, and I had an uncle that would just constantly give me Star Wars toys left and right. Yeah. Sometimes I wish I had Transformer toys, but, you know, Star Wars toys were pretty cool. Millennium Falcon, Jabba the Hutt, all this stuff was awesome. And so I would draw a lot of space scenes and stuff because it was just like, wow, this stuff is just blowing my mind. And then I saw Spielberg films, and I like the scope of the images were just amazing. The compositions were so wide-angled, and I'd never seen anything like that before. And again, it sparked my imagination.
Yeah.
And then going down the line, it started getting more personal. My friend Aaron, the one that introduced me to the comics, was also an artist. Though now he's like an abstract artist. He doesn't really do anything with comics. He was kind of an inspiration too, because I saw that he was doing it. I thought, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And then I started noticing other artists more towards the way I was heading. And Frank Frazetta ended up being one of the bigger first ones. Gil Kane was a huge one. That was the only one, I think, Gil Kane, back before I was 10, was the only one I would notice. Like, his artwork just stood above everything else I saw at the time, which wasn't much, but it still just stood out for me. I was kind of regretful when he passed away, because he was at a convention I went to in 95 or 96, but I'm nervous around people I admire.
Yeah, no, you're not alone on that one. I do as well.
Yeah, I didn't approach him, and I kind of regret doing that now. And then Art Adams was big, too, for me. In the early 90s. Past that, I started getting into the whole Image guys, because that's what everybody was getting into at the time, but McFarlane stood out for me. Larson was the biggest one that stood out, more not so much for his art, but I could tell he was like the only one out of the whole bunch that was having fun with the stories, whereas everybody else was just churning out something to churn something out. He gave me some good advice when I first met him, and seems like a pretty good guy as far as, yeah, he wants to do it for money, but he also wants to do it for himself kind of thing, and I respect people like that.
That's good. So obviously, a wide range of influences, and I suspect if I let you go on, you'd have a lot more to bring into the conversation.
Yeah, life is influence.
Exactly, yeah. Have you been entirely self-taught, or did you actually take formal training on the art side of things?
I tried to. I'm mostly self-taught. I went to college for a little bit, and it was great as far as the painting classes went, because I didn't know techniques and all this other stuff or color mixing. But they actually asked me, like in the illustration classes, how I did something or how to do this. The teachers did, and I thought, this isn't working right. I'm paying for the class. I mean, they were great teachers and stuff, but no, I never was able to take anything away from any kind of schooling I got on art. And in high school, it was even worse. We knew about the whole hatching, cross-hatching in comics. So I remember one assignment really stuck out on me, and the teacher wanted us to show examples of hatching and cross-hatching. And this is in the early 90s, and she kept giving me a bad grade on it and said to do it right. And I was a pretty quiet guy in school. I didn't like to stand out so much, but after about second or third time she told me I wasn't doing it right, I yelled at her and told her to show us then. I haven't seen you draw one thing since I've been in this class. And she got embarrassed, and I kind of regret doing it, because all of a sudden every day after, the other kids, anytime they had a problem, would keep bringing that up. But I got low grades in art in high school.
It's always bad when that happens. It's weird. I mean, I suppose the old adage is, if you can do, if you can't teach.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I suspect that your teacher then, she probably could, but it wasn't something she wanted to do necessarily.
On the opposite side of things, though, my friend who had the same teacher said that she was a big influence on him, so I don't know.
Right.
But he's more into fine arts, and I think that's more what she was geared towards, because she knew a lot about art history, and she enjoyed watercolor still lives of flowers, something that I just don't get into.
Yeah, it's something that does, it still very much influences or affects the way that, for want of a better phrase, I'll call geek art, how that's perceived, as opposed to the fine art. I mean, there is as much art in comic books and trading cards and personal commissions as there are in any other. There's as much technique and as much style and as much flair.
Yeah, but what's funny, though, is the art critics for fine arts are like these snobbish people that couldn't draw a straight line, but then you get into people are critiquing like comic or illustrative arts, and they actually point out realistic problems or realistic good spots on people's work. And I'd rather be an illustrator than a fine art person, because I know I'd go nuts and want to attack one of those art critics if they ever said anything to me. As snobbish as I've seen. There's some art contest show on TV, and that's like the first time I've seen art critics go at it, and I thought it was ridiculous. They were kicking like these really, really good artists off the contest because they didn't meet their expectations.
It's a weird thing. And the thing that bugs me slightly about this is that it's down to who you are as far as whether you're considered fine art. I mean, look, for example, at the work of Roy Lichtenstein, who is ripping off comic strips left, right, and center.
Oh, is that guy more recently that like ripped off that Tank Girl?
No, I don't think so. This is the guy who he was very much into pop art. He did huge art canvases that were... I suppose Bang is probably the most famous one, which has a plane coming, looking like it's coming out of the canvas with a big bang, like sort of Batman-style bang, you know?
I never really got into pop art so much. I try and keep my mouth shut about Andy Warhol.
Well, fair enough.
But, no, it brings up arguments with friends, but I'm more...
If any listeners aren't familiar with Roy Lichtenstein, do a look up on Google and you'll see, on images, and you'll see some of his work, and tell me that stuff isn't comic book art. Just done big. That's what gets me sometimes about the fact there's as much art in the real world stuff as there is in the fine art stuff, and yeah, the fine art stuff is regarded as, you've got to do it this way, and it's wonderful and gets the big bucks, and then guys doing trading cards and comics and that sort of stuff don't get anything. I don't get anywhere near the credit they should.
Well, I think it's funny though. I remember there was a girl 10 years ago who was just basically Picasso clone or just doing this cubist type art. She was selling paintings for $10,000 a piece. You know, if that happened in comics, look what happened with Greg Land, you know, doing somebody else's style or swiping their thing. People are all over it, and they're lucky to get a job if they keep it up anymore after that. So I think we're a little bit more on this end of things. I think we're a little bit more critical as far as the actual artwork. Whereas there, it's just all opinion, 100% pure opinion.
Well, in fine art, you're paying homage.
Yeah.
Or influenced by. Whereas in our side of the art world, you're ripping it off.
Yeah.
Okay. So we make the leap from, you're doing all this stuff yourself, and I'm assuming you've got books and sketchbooks, and you've got pieces of paper lying around with stuff you've drawn on, and you're doing all that sort of stuff. How did you manage to get into the commercial side of things?
Oh, man, this was it was about as much a surprise to me as anybody. Years ago, I think after high school, I decided, okay, I'm going to be a comic book artist. And there was this group near here in a place called Kalamazoo, Michigan, that got together. And some of the guys are, like, working for Nickelodeon now on animations. They would get together every Saturday, and I would drive up there and hang out with them. And I really was pushing myself. I was going to college at the same time, and I was also working in a factory full-time. And I got to the point where I would say about 97, I just said, I can't do this anymore. I just really, really loathed and hated drawing at that point. I mean, when it became something where I was trying to get a job and thinking my livelihood depended on this, it just didn't become this thing that was natural to me anymore. It became more mechanical. I became more removed from it, less emotional about it. So I stopped, literally stopped drawing from 97 to about 2008. I won't say completely because I'm sure there's like maybe 20 to 30 doodles in that time period that I did, but nothing serious. And then 2008, early 2008, and I remember really vividly, I just lost my job at a metal fabrication factory, and my uncle just passed away from brain cancer that we didn't know anything about, and I was having problems with somebody at the time, too. And basically, it felt like, you know, the world's collapsing in on me, but I looked at losing that factory job as a blessing because I hated working there. I hate working in factories, period. And then I noticed I used to go to this forum, and they had a call, a comics forum, and they had a call for people to submit sketch cards for an auction. It was Blue Line's first cancer auction. I thought, well, you know, I don't have any money at this point. I'd really like to do something in my uncle's memory. So I requested 4 sketch cards, looked at them, realized how small they were, and thought, oh, man, I can't believe I did this. And I tried to draw on them, and I ended up drawing on them, and they did pretty good at the auction, and that was where I thought it was going to stop. But then I started talking more to a guy named Wesley Wong, who I also knew from the boards, and he does, I don't know if he still does it, but he did the recoloring on Marvel Masterworks.
Oh, right.
And a guy who's been there, done that, I was asking him, like, well, how do you, because I'm trying to figure out a way to make money and stuff, and I asked him, well, how did you get to the point where you're at? And he explained it to me. And something with World of Warcraft, doing commissions for that, seems to be a really good place to start. I never did do that. It started getting thoughts in my head going, and I was still fighting the whole, I don't know how I can charge for art. It doesn't feel right to charge for art.
Yeah.
And then I had another artist basically do whatever version of slapping me across the face through the internet that they could, and told me it's not the art that people are paying for, it's the time. You got to realize, like, I'll say some sketch cards can take me 6 to 10 hours to do. That's 6 to 10 hours of my life that I can't get in a time machine and get back. So,
yeah.
I mean, people aren't paying for my art. They're paying for pieces of my lifetime. So,
exactly.
Then I accidentally came upon Scoundrel, and I was really shocked that place was there because I noticed people I knew were there, knew for a couple years beforehand, Ingrid Hardy and Kat Staggs and Rene Delez were all there, and I remember asking one of them why they didn't tell me about this place before. But I didn't really stick around too much. I thought, you know, this is cool. I'll do some art trading and whatnot. I never thought of getting into sketch cards for anything else. And then Roy Cover was showing this work by Dustin Nguyen, the guy who he did draw Batman. I don't know what he draws now. And I thought, wow, that stuff's amazing. And then I saw he showed Nar's work, and I'm like, holy crap, that's on a sketch card. And my mind was blown. I'm like, wow, it's just awesome. And then, of course, that led to finding out what, like, one of his cards went for on eBay or something, because I went back to Scoundrel to see if I could see more of his artwork there. And I think at the time he had that Spider-Man Venom puzzle card that went for, like,
oh, yes, I remember that. Yes, yes.
Yeah. I was like, wow. Maybe I should actually look into this. So I got a hold of Roy and asked him. He had some information because it was really weird. People were not forthcoming with any kind of information at the time. It was like this secret, almost secret society. And Roy, he's really good about being forthcoming with any information. He's a really good guy as far as that goes. And the information was for Rittenhouse, because they contacted him at the time. Things weren't going so bad for him that he actually had to do artwork as far as Rittenhouse and whatnot, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
So he really wasn't interested in it at the time. I kept sending samples to Rittenhouse. I found out how to get a hold of Tops. And I kept doing this and doing this. I had struck up conversations with Nathan because he saw me struggling. I saw him struggling. I saw a couple other people struggling. Finally, it got to a point where I just stopped submitting because I was getting tired of waiting. It was months and months. And Nathan was talking about wanting to start this company and asked if I would want to do it if he does it. And I said, yeah, I guess I can do it. Because it wasn't really serious talk at the time.
No.
And then he said, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do that. And he said that on the day that I got the invite from Rittenhouse for X-Men Archives. So that was kind of, I was just floored that day, and it was just really awesome. 2 sets. But, I mean, just the fact that I get to officially work on X-Men was really awesome.
Yeah.
And then it just went from there.
just exploded. I should explain, Nathan is Nathan Ohlendorf of Sad Little. So you booked your first gig on a commercial set. What was that as an experience to work on?
It wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Right. It very rarely is from previous conversations with people. It very rarely is.
I set high marks for myself constantly, and the problem was I thought I could handle the workload. This is back before Rittenhouse started expanding the deadlines a little bit more. I had, like, I think 3 weeks to do 150 cards.
Youch.
And I really don't know how to make a good quick drawing. Every card I do, I try and teach myself something new on it, so it's just constantly upping myself. And because I'm taking that time to learn something new on every card, it takes longer than the previous card.
Yeah.
So it really was something. I was in a panic situation. I didn't make all 150 cards, and I thought, okay, that's it. Well, at least I got, you know, the chance to work on the X-Men set, but I got an invite back for the Spider-Man set.
Oh, that's good. So you must have done something right then.
Yeah, but I had 2 weeks to do, I think, 150
cards. Ow.
No, 200 cards. 2 weeks to do 200 cards on that one.
They're ramping up the fissure there, aren't they?
No, I asked for 200 cards, but they asked me like 2 months previous to if I want to be on the set. And then I thought, okay, maybe they decided they didn't want me on the set. And then the cards show up 2 weeks before the deadline.
Ow.
It's a lot more organized now as far as everything goes, because the Marvel 70th set was just easy to work with, and... Marvel Heroes and Villains would have been I fell short on that one because I did commissions, and I'm just really bad at trying to keep everything organized and making a flow, so I kind of shorted myself on that.
I know Heroes and Villains was an interesting set for some artists to work on. Some quite liked the idea of having to do two, because I mean, the rules on that one were that you had to do two characters per card, I think. Was that right?
Yeah, I didn't. Two or more characters per card, and I didn't understand why some people were dropping off because they thought that was too much. I have a hard time with just one character cards, but the two character cards was something that just didn't seem abnormal to me. I mean, it just seemed like run-of-the-mill stuff.
Yeah.
That, and I did a commission for Kevin, the Marvel Cosmic Collector, and I thought I was doing something special. I did 33 characters on a Marvel 70th proof until Locke told me that he did whatever on the Civil War card. But I was I was able to get that many characters on there, so it kind of was a stepping point. And I remember a couple commissions and stuff, people would just ask for like the one character or whatnot on there, and they'd end up getting a card with six characters on it just because I thought it fit the scene and everything right.
Yeah, so you pretty much got into coping with such a small piece of estate as far as drawing is concerned. Because, I mean, 2.5 by 3.5 really isn't an awful lot of room, is it?
No, it's not. And it took a while, but now the kind of reverse effects happened. Mm. Not so much easier to draw bigger, but that's not a problem because now I can draw smaller, blow it up, and then transfer it. But,
right.
Like, the commission special I had, which I really don't know about ever doing specials again, because I'm still working on these things. This is from July. It was basically a headshot special, and it's really hard just doing headshots, because I want to do something more intricate, and I got to remind myself I have more of these cards I got to do, and this is all I said I was going to do was the headshots. So it's really hard just doing those. I'm still trying to pack as much as I can into the headshots, but...
Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, you mentioned at the same time as booking your first gig with Rittenhouse, you also started work on the Sad Little set. That's Legends and Lore, is it?
Yeah.
Legends and Lore was an interesting one, because the main gist of that one was it had to be Legends, well, characters from Legends and from Lore who were out of copyright, so there was no licensing issues.
Yeah.
But it opened up the scope to artists to use their imagination a lot more rather than having a set design that they had to stick to. Was that something you preferred, or had you got into the habit of preferring to do sort of licensed characters where you have a guideline?
Well, at the time, I did like that idea, but then when it came to actually sitting down and trying to figure out who to draw, that was a tough one. And then character design is always pretty tough. You want to do something that's charismatic and not put-offish, so that was kind of tough. But I enjoyed it. What I enjoyed more was the last set I did for him was Dreamers of Darkness. I could get really into that one, and I did get really into that one, because the other thing my mom did besides art was torture me as a little kid by making me watch horror movies with her. What she didn't know is I ended up liking being scared to death, so I kind of like playing around with those visuals. I don't think I'm quite where I could be as far as horror art goes, but I enjoyed myself doing that.
Yeah, sounds like you had an interesting mom.
Yeah.
Getting you into the horror stuff. Mine would have run a mile from that, but there you go. So, okay, so moving on a step now, what other stuff have you done?
I did Topps baseball cards series 1 and 2 for 2010. That was just a horrible nightmare of an experience. Before the second set came out, I had wanted to do a Star Wars set. And I kept trying and trying, but after the second series came out, there was a problem with communication. I didn't get the returns that I asked for, so I basically what I feel I have is worthless returns because they're not like in-demand baseball players, but no. They're all I could pull from my reference, and I wasn't going to repeat myself, so... I mean, it was great that they actually sent boxes. I think they only sent me one box, actually, for the first series, and that one I just flipped on eBay because I just don't collect baseball cards. Well, I was kind of torn. I kind of wanted to open it because the inner child was saying, come on, do it. But then the grown-up me was saying, well, I'd rather, you know, get food than keeping packs open. So, but there, it's just better safe than sorry. I don't want to deal with them ever again. Upper Deck, that was actually the first company I kept submitting to, and I never got any replies or anything. And then, of course, that whole situation happened at the beginning of this year, so I figured...
Oh, yeah, right about the time of Iron Man, yeah.
Yeah, I figured that was a lost cause, so...
Yeah, that was a very strange situation. You mentioned baseball cards. I mean, that's quite a radical difference from what collectors might call or non-sport cards, shall we say, the regular type of things, because I'm guessing if you're doing sketch art in a baseball set, you've got to be fairly close to the real thing. You don't have a lot of scope for tweaking it.
Well, when I started, I had two pads I could go down. I can pull off the whole illustration techniques or whatever, but I don't enjoy it. It's more a technical thing than it is a enjoyable thing for me. I don't understand how people can do it because it's literally, for me, it's super boring to do. And so my best doesn't come out in them. But I try to stick to things I enjoy as far as what I accept for work, and I used to enjoy baseball a lot, so I thought I'd do that. I've also done some PSCs and card trades beforehand that were portrait-style, realistic-looking. Yeah. But since then, I've decided that I'm just not going to focus on that anymore because it just truly isn't enjoyable for me at all. Just too technical.
Yeah, it's more of a test of skills rather than a use of imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should mention, I was on the Bregent sci-fi and horror set this year, too. I forgot that.
Right, okay. Okay. Yeah. How did you find that? Because, again, I mean, that was another one that was... sort of had style or set guidelines. You were given subjects, and it was very much based on posters, movie posters, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Some of those I just basically did the recreations, and this is where I was starting to get a feel for myself. Before when I did a recreation, I would try and be as accurate as possible to the actual artist's work. But this one, I thought, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more freeing on this. So some of the pieces are actually just like the poster recreated, but the way I draw, basically just taking the compositions and that's it, and not the actual line work or anything else. Plus, I don't know, it's kind of hard too, but a good thing that I was trying to transfer the idea of a painting into line work. That was something that was kind of different. Some of it came out really good where I was trying to get it as accurate to the image because some of the images, you know, in baseball you're just doing people, but some of the imagery for these posters was just, you know, monsters and... just as aliens, all this neat stuff. So I really got into it. Frankenstein, which I ended up buying on eBay that I did, was really, really one of my favorite things to do on that set. And I was just surprised that it came out the way it did, but I was enjoying myself with it. So, and I like those movies too. So, like Invasion of the Saucer Men, I didn't realize that they didn't have it as one of their posters on their list, but I knew they had the license for it because they did on a previous set. Plus they sell some Invasion of Saucer Men merchandise, so I was happy I got to do that.
it's great that the two of your interests finally met with a big explosion of creativity. So.
Yeah.
So now, as I mentioned at the top, that you've been doing some work for Fivefinity. How did that come about?
This is not the way you get into a card company. I asked for samples from a sketch card company, samples as far as material and stuff, and one of the samples was the Moonstone Fivefinity sketch card. So I figured, hey, I got this sketch card, I'm going to draw Phantom on it, and then I'm going to see if I can sell it on eBay or something. I drew Phantom on it, and then I was thinking, I don't know if I should sell this, and I contacted Nicole Goff, who does design work for them. And since she's a friend, you know, I asked her, you know, I don't think I feel so good about selling this. I'm thinking maybe more I'll just give it away or something. And she said, no, don't do anything with it. And she talked to Steve, and Steve wasn't, I guess they weren't so happy that their cards were, the blank sketch cards were given away as samples from this printer. They don't do it anymore, so don't try and order samples from them. But, he liked it, and I said, I'll just rip it up or something. And what he was going to do was going to just, he told me to send it to him. He'll stamp something on the back, and then I can send it back to me, and then I can sell it. And he had the March of Dimes charity auctions coming up, and I said, you know, you just keep the card and put it up for auction. He did, and it was, to my surprise, it was one of the higher selling ones. I don't know why. But it was the only one I ever did, and I wasn't an official artist at the time, and that started dialogue with me and Steve, and I got to work on some Voltron stuff, and I got asked if I wanted to do Lady Death, and I said, sure. And then from that, I also have comic book cover I have to work on. But Steve, I can't believe it. Steve's just a really great guy. Probably one of the better people I've got to work for. So, but that was totally stumbling and everything into that, into working for Fivefinity. I tried before because I really wanted badly to get on the Voltron set. I'm a big Japanese robot fan, too.
Yeah. That Voltron set got an awful lot of buzz. A lot of people were talking about it on the boards, certainly. And it was from to a lot of people in the more wider collecting community, a completely unknown company, brand new, never seen them before. Where have these lot come from? Yeah. They had some amazing success in just the last year in the number of sets they've been releasing, and the amount of support they've had from artists. They seem a very art friendly company.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked, but when they started out, they actually had the call for I think it was Greatest American Hero was their first set. But at the time, well-known sketch card artists told me that anybody asking you for work or whatever in certain situations, you got to be cautious because they could be trying to rip you off or steal from you. So I was very paranoid at the time. I didn't want to do free work for any company. I don't care if they're saying it's for promotion or, you know, pay on the back end. That I didn't know. And here was this company that came out of nowhere, and it's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. I feel sorry for all these artists that are going to get ripped off here soon. And then... there was a pie on my face, but luckily I was the only person that knew that. So
it happens. I mean, unfortunately, you were right to be wary in some cases, because there are an awful lot of disappointments out there for people on both sides of the art world, the collectors and the creators. There are people out there who will stiff you for a card just because they can.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're moving on to the present now, and obviously you're still working on stuff. Anything you can talk about at a minute, or is that all completely hush-hush?
Just the Lady Death, that comic book cover, and I am doing an upcoming RA set that I can't really say anything about.
Sure.
Other than that, it's just commissions. I'm sure something else will pop up, because for the last, I don't know, 6-7 months, it's just been nonstop. And you got to realize I've only been probably working on card sets since last, summer of 2009, maybe spring of 2009. So I haven't really been in this that long, but the work just keeps piling up. And I think I have a problem where if it's something I like, I tend to want to jump on it because I'm afraid that it won't be there later.
Yeah.
So, like the people who have the license for the third Transformers movie, I didn't wait till they announced anything. I knew it was a card company. I contacted them. I don't know if they're necessarily going to release cards, but I told them about sketch cards and whatnot, just so I could get that chance before I miss it, because I've missed so many chances before. Yeah. And at the same time, I also look out for work for other people. I try to get I did get hold of a wrestling trading card company, because I knew...
Oh, really?
Yeah, Rich Maloney likes wrestling, and they weren't putting out sketch cards, so I just gave him a professional informed email about sketch cards and told them that if they decide to start it, I can help them out with getting artists. But I'm just always on the lookout now, because I'm afraid of missing something.
Yeah, you got to get those opportunities when they occur, and if you can't find them, then you make them. So
yeah,
exactly. Okay, you mentioned commissions there. You actively take commissions, or do you work as some of us do, which is taking slots and making them available as and when you're ready to?
I take them when I'm ready to, or when I need to get some food. I'm not really making too much money off this stuff, and you know, add on top of that I'm really bad with time management and whatnot. Where I really shot myself in the foot was back in July. I did a sketch card special, headshots, $10 a piece, and I think I don't know how many people I got. I was hoping for up to 100, but it wasn't that much because I was trying to do what my friend Jeremy Treese was doing, but what I didn't take into account is he's a faster artist than I am.
Right.
And again, it's the same thing where each card, I'm trying to outdo the card before it, and so I'm adding more to the new card than the previous one, and it just taking forever to do. And that's, I think I posted on my Facebook that once those are done, once the sets are done, I'm just going to breathe for a little while and maybe cry.
Okay. So how, if people wanted to get in touch, you sound you out about doing something, how would they get in touch? What would be the best place to go?
There's no centralized place at all. All I do is do the calls for commissions, or I'm pretty easy to get a hold of. I got on Scoundrel. I have that. I don't know my Facebook page address, but people are willing to go to your page, they can find me there under George Galloway.
Yeah, I'll make sure there's links to your Facebook and to Scoundrel,
yeah,
so that people can find you there. You're not on DeviantArt, I noticed.
I was on DeviantArt. I am now, but I'm kind of not a big fan of that place.
It seems to have very much of a polarizing effect on artists. Some artists love it, some artists don't.
Well, it's just I've read the stories, like Brett Booth had his artwork pulled because he reported somebody else for swiping his artwork and claiming it as their own on DeviantArt. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you know comics, you know who Brett Booth is. And it was some 12-year-old kid. The 12-year-old kid or whatever got to keep the art, which is a dinosaur. That was a lot worse rendition of Brett's. You could tell it was traced.
Yeah.
But they pulled Brett's and told him not to steal artwork from other people, and so he pulled out of there. And
understandably,
then there's been situations with some artists where they've been having people harass them on there, and DeviantArt won't do anything. I've had to change my address because I started getting harassing notes on my original DeviantArt site.
Right.
And instead of making a huge deal out of it, I just closed out my account and started another one, which is George Calloway as one word on DeviantArt.
Right.
So it'd be deviantart.com or georgecalloway.deviantart.com.
Sure. Okay. I'll make sure there's links to that as well so people can get an idea of the sort of stuff you do. And you're contactable through most of these means. So if someone is really desperate to get a piece of your work and they're persistent, they might be able to break through and get something from you.
Yeah, I'm a fairly easy person to contact. And as long as you're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. I respect everybody, and I like making friends and fans. So.
Sure. Well, George, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. Thank you for agreeing to come onto the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, hey, you know, we had an exchange of emails, and you came across as a really nice guy, and I'm glad to be able to prove that you are. So,
We all do.
Luckily, we didn't have our bad day on the same day. Otherwise, this could have been a very short interview.
But it'd pull in some ratings, wouldn't it?
Well, it would do. Yeah, Jerry
Springer proved that.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I may have to sort of prod you with a stick a couple of times and see if we can get some abuse going on. This is not going to have explicit tag. I'll warn you now, listeners. This is genuinely a pleasure for me to chat to you. Thank you for agreeing to come on, and good luck with future projects.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to George Calloway. If you'd like to get in touch with George, you'll find links on the BTC website. My thanks to George for agreeing to come on to the show and do the interview with me, and I will make sure that there are links to the various places you can find him on the BTC website. Behind the Canvas is recorded using Pamela for Skype and a Logitech USB headset on a Windows XP PC. It's edited using Audacity and is compiled using GarageBand on an Apple Mac G4. Web services provided by Google Sites, 1&1, and Amen World. Email services provided by Gmail. Behind the Canvas is released under a Creative Commons license. For more information about the Creative Commons license, please visit the Cardcast website at www.cardcast.co.uk. And remember, you can find any information I have available about Behind the Canvas at the Behind the Canvas website. Just go to the aforementioned cardcast.co.uk website and click on the BTC link. I've got a domain set up, I just haven't set the forwarding up yet, so as soon as I've got that all sorted out, I'll make sure that's available to everybody as well. And for more information about me and about the podcasts I do, then why not follow me on Twitter? I'm on Twitter at UKCardcast. All followers gratefully received. That's it for this one. Until the next one, support your local artist, no matter where they be.